Begin transmission.
You are listening to Corellian Run Radio, your route through hyperspace to the latest news on Star Wars: The Old Republic.
Hi, and welcome to Corellian Run Radio. This is episode 173, and recording live Saturday, November the 19th, 2016. My name is Jason. I'm joined by my co-host, Rev. Howdy, Rev.
Hey, Jason.
And also, I'm joined by my other co-host, Mox. Hey, Mox, how's it going?
Oh, it's going okay, JT. What have you been up to the last, well, I should usually say last couple weeks, but it's been just a little over a week since we last met, Miss Rav.
I have actually been up to a lot. I've mostly been power leveling, which is really weird if you know me. I don't really do that, but Dark Fierce Light event is almost over, and I really want that companion. So I did the whole of Knights of the Fallen Empire on my Guardian, and I managed to reach level 46 today on my assassin. So I'm getting close.
Congrats.
Thank you. So what do I need to do now? I need to hit level 65 with my assassin and do the Shadows of Raven. And done. Then I should be done. So I should make that, right?
In a week or so. Absolutely. I mean, even less. I mean, honestly, once you hit 50, just go and do an operation like Scum and Villainy or something like that. You'll be 65 in no time.
Yeah, I thought if I do the Shadow of Raven, I'd probably get there too. I also need to do the flashpoints that are included in that expansion.
Oh, yes. If you have to do that, then absolutely.
How are you guys doing on Dark for Light, by the way? Are you still doing that, or are you already long done with it?
I finished completely. I got the legendary or whatever that top tier is. Like whenever that day that you could complete it, like I finished that day, like way back in like August or whatever it was when they released that last chapter. So yeah, I've been done that a while.
Yeah, wow. He was one of those guys that was waiting on BioWare to get his legendary.
Right.
That's crazy, yeah. But that's the with all the 8 classes and all that stuff.
Yeah, 8 classes, all the hard modes, the whole deal.
Wow, that's really impressive. I feel like such a slacker now.
Well, you know, it just was one of those things, like, I knew that I had school coming up, I wanted to have it done before school, like, got too busy, so I, like, was on my summer break and did it at that point.
Well done. So, yeah. No.
You know, as far as I did not go for legendary. I kind of knew that right off the bat. I was like, nah, I didn't think so. So I was busy helping everybody else, and I just got the Eternal one on mine.
Oh, that's not really bad either, Eternal. That's still awesome. Yeah, I only go for the companion after that. I mean, I already have like all the classes at level 65, you know, and I just want to do it again. I don't have that much time. Yeah, and also I've been exploring Zakuul, which is was a lot of fun because you can like change the maximum zoom distance in your game files, and by doing that, I managed to get like shots that are really taken from really high up. And
yeah,
that
there
was
we go.
A lot of fun.
Got one up in the stream now.
Ah, cool. Yeah, I can't see it for some reason. I'm not sure why it doesn't show, but
I think it's an operator error.
Oh, okay. Well, it will have to do. No, but that was super cool. So, and I saw some place you can normally not see, so it was cool. And and finally, I've been also writing a blog post about Lotro, and I've been writing a pretty critical article on it. And I actually got people sending me in-game tells, which is new for me. So people were so passionate about what I wrote that they looked up my characters and sent tells. Which is strange. Did that ever happen to you guys?
It's the price of popularity. And the fact that you are a female gamer. So that is why you're getting, you know, followed out.
No. Yeah. Because I don't have a real life picture on my blog. And there's a reason for that, too.
Well, does that matter, Mox?
Very smart. I have to tell you, nobody likes me. So, you know, nobody comes up and says anything to me. So, you know, now I'm feeling bad.
No, don't. Because these were people that didn't like what I wrote, obviously. They were so passionate. I told them to write a comment on my blog post instead of ranting to me, well, in nice words.
Oh, they were ranting to you about
Wow.
In-game?
Sort of. Like, they were being really polite, and I was like, I know where this is going. They're like, they started up with making these really nice comments, like, it was a really interesting idea that you had in your blog post, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah. So that was what happened. So it was quite interesting. I think that that was everything that was interesting for the last 2 weeks. So now I go over to the next part, with your permission.
Yes, go right ahead, Rath. Tell us about the next part of your little
statement.
It's going
to be really exciting now.
There's a special announcement I'd like to make, and that is that we have a mystery guest tonight on Corellian Run Radio.
Who is that?
Yeah, you have no idea, right? Because we've been thinking really hard about how to tackle the upcoming class changes. And we wanted to invite someone who would play all classes, so we would have everything covered. And this is where you guys are going to shout, rigged, because tonight we have Theory Crafter, Walking Wiki, and, coincidentally, my boyfriend Conrad on the show. Hey there, Conrad. Can you tell us something about what you've been doing the past few weeks?
Hi. Hi, everyone. What have I been doing the past few weeks?
Well, week then.
Week. Okay, 1 week. I don't even know what I mean, I don't... Do you really keep track of what you do? Like 2 weeks ago? I don't know.
Yeah, we kind of do.
Past, right? You do?
A little bit.
That comes with the job.
Right, yeah. What have I been doing? I mean, I finished all of the Dark vs. Light stuff that I decided I would do a while ago, a couple of weeks back. So I've been mostly chilling, really, just kind of waiting for 5.0 to hit. I'm watching some of the dev streams. I've been playing a bit of Lord of the Rings Online in between, because I have a lifetime subscription, doesn't cost me anything.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was a pretty good deal that you could get in on early, 8 years ago or so.
Very interesting. You've been playing some Swotr, you said, also?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I still run my guild's operations twice a week, assuming we have the numbers for it. So, still doing that. Recently, we've been doing some Dread Fortress, Dread Palace. What else?
Now, is that Dread? You're doing hard mode, correct?
Oricon
on that?
Right, yeah, sure, yeah.
Awesome.
Some Fortress Nightmare mode also.
Nightmare mode? Wow.
Yeah. Nightmare mode's my favorite.
Very cool, man. So, yeah, we will definitely get more information from Conrad later as we talk about the class changes. So, Mox, what have you been up to, sir?
Well, let's see. Last night, we helped some guildies get their progression on their DVL achievements. We have some people that are still kind of lagging behind a lot like Rav. So I think you're going to see a lot of scrambling in the next, 8 days that they have left. We did a bunch of flashpoints where we basically set people up with the last boss only of their flashpoint. So we had like a group of 4 people that needed the flashpoints. So we would run like pairs of people through the flashpoints to set them up. And then they would come in after running their own flashpoint, they'd finish and come in and grab the last boss of that flashpoint for their, you know, their achievements.
Hey, Mox.
Yeah.
We have the chat is still saying they're missing your voice, buddy.
100%. Yeah, I'm seeing that too. Hang on.
I will continue a little bit on what I've been doing. I would, like Mox said, we had a guild run. Normally, Friday night is our WoG night. And so basically, I made the suggestion of making WoG night our DVL WoG night. So we had DVLing with WoG. And so basically what we did, we staged everybody and set up a spreadsheet. Yes, Elise, we use a spreadsheet. And we set up a spreadsheet with everybody to fill in what ones they still needed as far as tacticals and hard modes. And we set up a team for hard modes. And then the rest of us that were on tacticals, we basically, some of us that already had all those done, we would start going through and clearing out a flashpoint till we got to the last boss. Yeah, go ahead, Mox.
Hey, can everybody hear me now?
Hey, Jet, can you hear Mox now?
I probably didn't say anything too important, so if they didn't get that early stuff, it'll be on the actual one.
Yay! Oh, yeah, right, Mox now. Mox is now live. So yeah, like we stage everything till we got to like last boss. So the 3 of us that were in there would then wait, invite somebody in, let them take over the group leadership, and invite all the people, and we'd rotate that. So, so how many did we end up getting done last night? You figure out, Mox.
According to the spreadsheet, which I know Elise loves, we got 21 separate achievements. Now, that was basically 6 flashpoints where somewhere between 3 and 4 people needed them.
Yep. And then was that also including some of the hard modes we ran? I know
Parion got 3 hard mode flashpoints done. So that was like a separate group that was running alongside the tactical groups.
Yeah, it was a pretty good time. I think we're still got a few more. And so over this next week, of course, here in the United States, we have Thanksgiving's coming up on this next Thursday. So people with some time off. And so when they can kind of get away from the family, sneak away, get at the computer, I think some of us are going to set up some more times to run some of those tacticals and everything like that. And I think a bunch of them are still needing Eternal Championship. So we're going to group up and knock that out of people so they can get up the Eternal level at least and get that companion.
Yeah. I'll be offline from basically like Tuesday till Sunday, be away. So I won't have any access to SWTOR for that time. So I'm leaving it in the capable hands of JT and the other officers of the guild to help out. But if you are on Harbinger and need some help with these, please do, look for Unholy Alliance and see if anybody wants to group up with you. Great way to get that stuff taken care of.
Definitely. We like to help everybody out, and we love to get that, everybody have that, was it going to be the Chiz companion, right?
I think the rigged result
Yes,
was,
the rigged.
Make Odessen great again with a Chiz companion.
Yes, but it will be great if we get to use the vented lightsabers that she has.
Oh, I'm definitely stealing that.
I'm totally stealing those.
You guys are terrible.
I know, right? But at least me and Mox are awake. I was, Mox was up, you were up till what, 3:30? Yeah, I was on up till, Jim is in the chat room. She was up with me. We finished off a one with Chicken Sith and Darth Brundle. We were in there. I was about till 4. I didn't get in bed till 4:30 a.m. So so we were awake. So we're here. So that's the important thing. But
I'll be awake.
I love being. And the other thing on top of that, I was tanking. So I had been doing more of that, so I enjoyed that.
Oh, nice. What class were you on?
Running my Vanguard, mostly.
Oh, nice.
We were playing on the wrong side last, and I felt so off, that's why I couldn't sleep.
He couldn't sleep, we're on the dirty pub side.
It's all Marshall's fault.
Well, with that said, and while we're still awake, let's get into the news.
From the Newsnet and beyond.
And yes, we're in the news, and Mox, that was in regular chat, but that's okay. Mox is X'd up to group for grouping, so we're ready to group him, him in for us. Man, and also Jim, thank you in the chat room. She said I'm an awesome tank. Those credits will be in the mail when you get back in game. Thank you.
Hey, speaking of chat, welcome to all the chat people. Good to see a hoppin' chat channel going on today. Don't forget, we are giving out some prizes, so hang out in chat for a little later on.
Definitely want to give a shout-out to Larry Everett with the Hyperspace Beacon. They're giving us a host. And also Kid Lee is in there, so they are... he's giving us a host there. I see Volk. I think Ring is in there also. So definitely thank you guys for coming up by the chat room. And so in the news this past week, we got another trailer, Rule the Galaxy trailer. And we will go into this caveat of for those of you who are avoiding anything to do with story or anything like that, you might want to skip ahead a little bit because we're going to, for those of you audio, skip ahead because we're going to talk a little bit about the trailer. So if you do not want any spoilers at all, yeah, skip ahead of this little part. We're going to talk about the Rule of the Galaxy. Do you guys get a chance to check out that trailer?
Yeah, I absolutely. Did. Yeah. Yeah.
I did watch it, yes.
Okay.
I mean, it's like 6 seconds or something. Okay, maybe not really.
So I was hoping a little more expanding on that. Hey, Mox, what did you actually think of the trailer?
It was good. It, obviously, like any good trailer, raised some questions, more than it answered. So that's always a good thing, right?
Definitely a good thing, because it can get you thinking, is this what I'm really seeing or something else? What was your take on it, Raph?
Yeah, I really liked this as well. And you get Am I allowed to talk? Yeah, people just saw it, right? Spoiler alert. You see fighting Valen and for the throne, so it really gives you a sense of direction where the storyline really is going now. Huh? I mean, with Knights of the Fallen Empire, you were missing this closure. You were like, huh, we're almost at the last chapter already, but the story isn't finished, you know? And I do get the feeling that now really we're getting that end of that story.
Right, and part of the story is not only, like, what you're seeing, it's like, okay, how did I get there? Like, how do you end up in the throne room? Like, how many skytroopers or knights do you have to fight to get there? Are we able to like, launch them into the pit also? That's one of my favorite things.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be cool. Some Valen roleplay.
Totally. How about you, Conrad?
I mean, I'm not really one for trailers and such. I actually don't mind just jumping into something without any knowledge beforehand, right? I usually try to avoid trailers and such if I go to the cinema.
Oh, great! I brought our guest on here. We spoil it for him. My bad.
No, I did watch the trailer. I mean, I watched it once, and you know, I didn't give it too much thought. It was very brief. Of course, there's, you know, people talking about Theron, etc. I mean, I'm not gonna read into that at all. I mean, for all we know, it could be a vision, or, you know, who knows? It could be a clone. It's Star Wars, right? Like, I don't think I don't think we can really make too many assumptions. But yeah, it was a fine teaser, right?
I definitely think it's a nice teaser, and like Conrad mentioned, Theron appears to be taking a quote nap around the 23-second mark. My one question for you is, why couldn't that be Koth? That's all I got to say. Why couldn't that be Koth?
I mean, if you tuned in to the recent, was it the most recent dev stream? According to them, then maybe you would get your wish, right? There was quite a bit of Koth bashing, as I recall.
I believe
the devs themselves.
Why Koth would bashing. There be?
They promised you could do
right.
something to Koth.
Yeah,
they
right.
promised we will be able to deal with people that we have felt needed some justice.
Well, then I have another issue that which we'll talk about later about what we will and will not get in Eternal Throne. But so sticking along, anything else that you want to add, Mox, on the trailer? Definitely the trailer. I think everybody should go see real quick.
No, I just am super excited for the story in, like, what do we got, 8 days or whatever it is, 9 days? I don't even know. It's a week from Tuesday, though, right?
Yeah, coming soon, definitely. Early expansion cannot get here soon enough for me. So, Rav, what about this past week? Anything that you found of interest in the news?
Yeah, well, there's also been this short story released, and it's written by Drew Karpyshyn, who also has been involved again with Star Wars storyline. Knights of the Eternal Throne. And this short story, we'll put a link up in the show notes later on if you're reading it. It goes about what happens to Senya and Arkon after the last chapter of Kotfa. So if you not have played that chapter, you should stop listening now. But I can assume that most people have, in fact, played it by now. So in this last chapter, you get to choose what you do with Senya, right? She goes off with Arkon, and you can either shoot her down or let her go. And this short story...
Do you really get a choice there? Come on.
Well, that's
sorry,
the, that's
I digress.
No, you're too fast. So yeah, in this short story, you see what happens. And basically, really short, it's Senya. She lands on Ord Mantell with Arkon, and he's really ill. She needs to take care of him. And there she runs into Valen, and I'm not going to say that much more. You can read it. I really recommend reading it because he's a great writer.
Yeah.
And
if you've seen the... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, if you've seen the Blur trailer, the Betrayed trailer, it's the basically the leading up to that very end when you see them facing off with that Ring of Fire.
Exactly.
Exactly, yeah. A lot of us had thought when we saw that Blur trailer, maybe that was a dream or a premonition, and actually it was what really happened. And come to find out where it happens is interesting. You find out in the Lost story, so definitely check that out. We will have a link for that in the show notes. So, Mox, what else did we have this past week?
We had the November live stream, November 17th. Actually, I shouldn't say just the November live stream. It was like the fourth live stream in November.
Yeah, I know, right?
Crazy. It was story time with Charles Boyd, which was phenomenal. He and Eric had a fireplace playing in the background to give them some atmosphere, and they were just talking in general about, like, kind of not really about the story, like a little bit here and there, but it's more about kind of setting the mood and the scene, and like kind of talking a little bit about the two planets that we're going to experience in Eternal Throne. We have the first one is that they talked about was Iokath, which is actually a Dyson sphere, which I don't know how many science fiction nerds you have here, but a Dyson sphere is basically a hollow sphere built around a sun, and then the interior of the sphere is where all of the construction happens. So it's a really interesting thing to have in the Star Wars world. And they showed us some art from there, and like some biodomes and all sorts of neat stuff where they're creating and preserving like atmospheres and planetary ecologies and such.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting, the stuff they talked about, the planets and stuff like that. You definitely brought up Iokath. I thought that was interesting. And the other one, Nathema, right, that we found out.
So. Yeah, Nathema, which is obviously, for those of you that are familiar with it, comes from the Revan story. It is the first planet that that the Eternal Emperor ravaged and kind of like destroyed and like to extend his life. And so we kind of get to go back there. It is where Valen was in this sanitarium, and apparently we have to go back there for some reason. So we don't know what that reason is, like why. You know, if she was there, like, why would she go back? Like, or why are we going back? Are we going back to get a, you know, a glimpse into her, like, what maybe made her so psycho? Or was she always psycho? I don't know. We'll see.
Maybe she senses there. She drops herself. Good luck, guys.
I kind of have a theory on that, because that was kind of a place where a wound in the Force had occurred, like you said, with the ritual, and where everything was void of everything. And if she could go back there, and where very little things were able to not only sense the Force was gone, everything, the essence of that, if she could go there and manipulate the Force, would you not be actually stronger on a place that had the Force? Food, kind of something to think about a little bit. Maybe that would, he sent her there not as a place to restrict her powers, but actually a place to where she would gain even further power?
So you're kind of saying it's like wearing leg weights when you jog.
Exactly. Maybe that's the whole thing behind it.
I don't know, something to think about. I like that. I like that theory.
Your tinfoil hat is on just right today, JT.
On all the time, 24/7 as it gets this close to the expansion.
So, Rav, you found a, or you picked up a tidbit from Charles in regards to the Star Fortresses and Eternal Throne. What was that?
It was a real quick mention, but I thought I would write it down because it's exactly the kind of thing that I would forget. And he mentioned really quickly that one of the first planets you go to in Kotat is Foss for some reason. I don't know. We don't know why, or but apparently we go to Foss. And he said, well, before you go there, you might want to complete the Star Fortress that's around there that will have influence on what happens. So I would suggest everyone, before you start it, the new expansion, go to do that Star Fortress of Force on the characters you're taking it through, or maybe and maybe on one not to see what happens.
Yeah, see, I saw that in our show notes, and I guess I must have totally glazed over that. I guess it was the fireplace, and I got all warm and fuzzy, and I totally missed that. So I know I was laying back, relaxing, you know. So definitely, I will have to make sure. I believe I got to make sure that all my characters have done that now. Good tip.
There was something else, though, that I noticed with the live stream, and I don't know if you guys want to talk about that, but they were also opening some command crates really early on, like three or so, to show people what looks like.
Right.
And I was kind of surprised by the fact that they only got green gear from those crates, so they got one schematic, but they didn't get any like really good gear, so it was a bit
right. My heart goes out to Eric Musco, the dude sets up and works all this time to get all this stuff ready, even using, and it was on a dev shard and stuff like that, gets everything set up, so yes, we're gonna make sure and have this happen so we can see the crate opening for you guys, and then what happens to him? all green gear, or
it's really hard to predict what the chances are for things right now. So, but yeah, I at first I thought, because there was this huge thing going on, everyone was worried about the RNG aspect, and they were like, yeah, but you get so many, it's not going to be a problem anymore.
Right.
We talked about this here on the show, and we were like, it's not going to be that bad, you know, it's if you get gear in everything. But we didn't know back then it also could be green gear. So, yeah. We'll just have to see how it turns out. But yeah, I'm a bit less happy about the RNG part now, personally.
Well, yeah, I think it's one thing to take. I think anytime on RNG, you're going to strike out. It's like when you roll single digits on an operation and you don't get any loot that night. You cannot predict that at all. Yeah. That's what RNG is. So I have to say the one thing that I have come away with was I was kind of down on RNG a little bit. The only thing that I have to say that kind of brought me back to thinking, yes, the sun will come out tomorrow, definitely is when we were in the movie with Musco, and he made mention of the fact of the higher level you get is the percentage of getting stuff increases. So for me to know that the loot table is going to get better the higher up I go in that is better than to know that my percentage is at level one will be the same at, you know, 157, you know. So to me, the higher up I get, it's going to be a better percentage. So that's kind of encouraging in my part. But
he wasn't exactly low level. He was in the 90s, if I remember.
I know.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I am trying not to be doom and gloom about all this. I am of the kind of the mindset that let's play it and see. If it's really that terrible, people will leave. And, you know, the game will suffer, and hopefully they'll make a change. Or, the other side of the coin is, you know, they will change it. So, yeah, those two possibilities. It's either going to be okay, or it's not. And hopefully they're going to be at least have their finger on the pulse of stuff. They seem to be more receptive to stuff. I think they had this in mind, and it kind of was, regardless of the pushback they've gotten from the community, it was the direction they were going to go. And we have to kind of take a wait and see. Maybe they've improved upon the 1.0 fiasco of the drops from the PvP bags or whatever they were. Right. We only have to wait and see. We don't know.
Right. And you got to remember when that came back so terrible originally with the RNG boxes, and they immediately switched to specs, and that was without the game even being live. So I think if it comes out, you know, it goes live week one, and even after a couple weeks, and it's still the percentages have not increased on that, I definitely can see them making a quick change on that to adjust the percentages. So, but again, we'll have to wait and see on that. So with that said, again, 5.0 is coming fast and strong. And with that, the other thing that's coming along in the expansion are the class changes. So as we get ready to go into the community buzz, we're going to bring Conrad along to help us understand all of that.
All right. Hey, Conrad, welcome to the show, and welcome to the Community Buzz. Why don't you give us a real quick kind of overview of you, how long you've been gaming, how long you've been playing SWTOR, and what is your, like, your main class?
Sure, right. First of all, I am also, in fact, my own person. You know, it's International Men's Day today. I'm not sure if people are aware, but, you know,
I did not
point out,
know that. That is
I am
good
an
to
individual.
Know.
I'm me. I'm not, you know, attached to. I'm not an ancillary. just, you know, throwing
oh, no.
it out there.
Are you sure?
Right. So with that out of the way, I have been playing Star Wars since day one. I was very excited for the game, right? Since it was announced, played, you know, the original Knights of the Old Republic, you know, the original two by BioWare and Obsidian, huge fan of those. And, I mean, I've been a subscriber ever since, still am for now. I hope I will remain one, but we shall see how, you know, these command crates and such, how it all turns out. Yeah, I play on the Red Eclipse, right? I see you got the nice little graphic up with me wearing the beautiful VR headset. This is when we were visiting Sony in London. Got to try out the VR headset. It's quite a lot of fun. But mostly, I really am a huge fan of MMO games in general. That's where most of my playtime is. Group content is, you know, the main reason I play games, really. You know, just chilling with friends and cracking the puzzles of the toughest content. Honestly, main class, I wouldn't really be able to tell you one. I don't know if you've been checking out Rav's blog archive, but at one point I decided, when I was on holiday at one point and I was bored, I decided to check the playtime distribution between all of my classes, all of my level cap classes. So I've got all 16 level cap, both sides. And it was something like my most played was a combined sniper gunslinger with something like 20% maybe. So it's very, very evenly spread out. I think I have a little bit more playtime on power tech and sniper than the other classes maybe, but not by a lot.
Nice.
Cool. So there's none that you favor more, like that you just enjoy more, like if you sit down, you're like, you'd lean towards it, like to go do some, you know, heroics or a quick flashpoint?
I mean, it really depends on the role as well, right? Like, I think when it comes to tanking, I enjoy the Juggernaut and the Assassin more than I do the Powertech, whereas the Powertech I enjoy DPSing on a lot. For healing, my favorite is Sork if I'm playing PvP, and in PvE I like the Merc. But it kind of comes and goes, right? Because classes change, right? I've mained pretty much every class in the game at one point or another, right? I've mained Juggernaut, I've mained Sork, I've mained Operative, Sniper, Power Tech, Merc, everything, right?
Okay.
I think maybe Assassin's the only one that's never been like the character I've brought the most to operations. But really, it kind of just comes and goes, depending on, you know, patches, class changes. 2.10, for instance, was a bit of a golden age for Marauders. I played a lot of Marauder back then.
Was that the Smash Age?
It was after the Smash Age. It was when Carnage was, at least in my opinion, at its most fun. It was when we had the 3 global gore window still. It was a very fun time, in my opinion, to play Carnage Marauder, particularly in PvP. So I played that a lot back then.
Cool. And what's your distribution of playtime between PvE and PvP?
That's also been varied a lot. Recently, it's been very little PvP, unfortunately. There have been times when I've had maybe 80% or 90% PvP gameplay. Because really, PvP doesn't take up that much of your overall gameplay if you're playing a lot, right? Like, generally, we're looking at 2, maybe 3 evenings per week of doing, you know, serious PvE content, meaning operations.
Right.
Because flashpoints, you know, they don't really have a lot of challenge to it, so I never really did much of that. But if you're then just playing in between the operation days, then you can rack up a lot of hours just PvPing, right? You can do it as much as you like, and it doesn't take a lot of organizing, right? You just grab some people that happen to be online and you hit the Q button, right? It's very easy to get into like that. But yeah, recently not perhaps as much as I'd like. I do enjoy it still.
Cool. Rav, do you have any questions for our guest?
I already know my guest.
I think you do.
Play along.
No, I'm just picking on her. Okay, so let's move into the reason we have you here. We asked you to come on board because of all the class changes that were announced. There's a lot of things going on there, and we have some stuff to say about it. Like, we kind of have chatted offline a little bit as a group, and we want to kind of share it with our audience here and get into these changes. So let me pull up that slide here. There we go. Class changes with Conrad. So we want to kick it off with kind of an overall disclaimer, right?
Right.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, we talked about this before we started recording, right? And it's that while we do know a lot of mechanical changes that they're making, we don't know a lot about numbers, right? So just things like how much damage does a particular ability deal now, that sort of thing, we don't have a lot of information on. So it's very difficult to make accurate predictions about what class balance and such will be like without, you know, without this information. But we can at least, you know, make some educated guesses on how well certain classes will perform,
right,
just based
for
on, you know,
example,
the utility they have.
Yeah, for example, they've removed the channeling of the Ravage, correct?
Right, right, and Flamethrower. I actually did some research on the Flamethrower because... as you mentioned, we had one of the Uprising live streams, right, from the developers when they were playing with the Bad Feeling podcast people,
yeah,
right? And as it so happened, it was streamed from the point of view of a power tech. So I actually looked into that earlier today. I don't know if you want to talk about that now or if you want to do it when we cover Bounty Hunters later on.
Well, I think just in general, I mean, we can cover that specific, but for,
right,
let's
yeah,
take
sure.
the Ravage, for example. We mm-hmm. know that they've removed the channeling from it, but we don't
right.
know, did they then reduce the damage of it since
right.
it's now an
yeah.
instant?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
We don't know. And
so...
Yeah,
that's
that,
the type
that
of thing.
Sense.
So keep that in sense. Mind as you guys are listening, that we're kind
yeah.
of doing some speculation. And our plan is is to maybe have Conrad back maybe in January or so to kind of like give a retrospective then. You know, now that we've had this stuff for a couple months, we've all had a chance to parse. We've got our new rotations. You know, do we like the changes or not at that point and see kind of where things stand? So that's kind of where we're going with this as an overall like thing, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, having the actual data obviously makes it much more possible to really assess what the changes are going to be like in practice, right? Because sometimes even if you have a class that is maybe a little weaker on the utility, you can make up for it with damage or you know, healing output or what have you. So.
Right. So we're going to touch on each of the classes. This is not going to be comprehensive by any stretch. We're not going to go line by line and discuss every change. We're kind of going to hit the big things that we think are in here. Like kind of, I mean, maybe, for example, let's start off with the agent and the operative. So their thing there was to give them what appears to be a little bit more damage, to make them a little bit more dangerous to what they said in their post. So let's start off there and let's talk about they're getting like some sort of AoE effect, a toxic haze. And it seems to be interesting.
Right, yeah. So Toxic Haze, right, is the first new ability announced for operatives in 5.0. And again, we have some information. We know that this is an AoE effect that you drop on the ground at your feet, unless you're healing spec, at which point it would be ranged. And it would last for 6 seconds. I think we can assume, based on the name, they will deal internal damage most likely, which is a good thing, right, because it penetrates things like defense and shielding in PvP. What we don't know is what the cooldown is, right? We have no idea how frequently you'll be able to use this ability. We don't know what the damage, you know, what kind of damage it will deal. But I think just going out on a limb and guessing, it will be more powerful than, you know, something like a Carbine Burst, which is the current AoE. It's, you know, kind of terrible.
Oh, it's not even, shouldn't even be on anybody's bar, right?
Right, yeah, I mean, it's not good, right? Operatives do not have particularly good AoE compared to other classes, so...
Could this be the Toxic Haze? Could be the operatives, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
Fire?
Yeah.
Is it Orbital
Strike? Kind of returning that?
Yeah, right. If you hadn't mentioned it, I probably would have, because I don't know, as you may know, if you played Operative before, I don't even remember when it was anymore, but they used to have Orbital Strike available to
right.
Imperial agents, and it was removed from the Operative class, which left them, you know, lacking AoE, right?
Yeah,
and
I think that was with Revan, it was removed, with the Revan expansion.
Right, yeah.
I believe
yeah,
so.
That sounds right, yeah. So, yeah, maybe this is a, you know, a way for them to try and compensate and give them some AoE back. It would certainly be a step in the right direction for them to be viable. Or, you know, more effective as a damage dealing class, particularly in PvE.
I have a question here. So, as an AoE effect, is this the first ranged persistent AoE effect that they have in the game?
No, there's Plasma Probe. That's kind of something that we can compare this
to,
right?
Gotcha, in the sniper, right? Sniper.
Right, yeah. Yeah, engineering
okay.
snipers. Yeah, engineering snipers gives access to Plasma Probe, which is a 9-second targetable persistent AoE effect.
Okay, and then Orbital Strike, I guess, would be the other one.
Right, yeah. Yeah, there's Orbital Strike. I suppose you could kind of mention something like Revivification on Sork Healers, but it's, you know,
wasn't,
different because it's
healed. Isn't the one that Power Techs and Vanguards get on the DPS spec the fire one that can leave a fire thing that does continual fire damage over time?
I mean, there's nothing that's a persistent AoE effect that's ground targeted.
Oh, that's right, AoE. Never mind, my bad.
Oil Slick, right? There's Oil Slick, but Oil Slick is a debuff. It's not really
it's damage. Debuff.
Right.
Yeah,
so it's
never
a bit
mind.
Different.
That was single target. My bad.
Plasma Probe is the closest thing we have, right?
Gotcha.
Plasma Probe seems very similar to Toxic Haze.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Is it odd that healers would get a ranged AoE damaging thing?
I think just, I'm just guessing here, but if it was me designing it, I could certainly see the healing spec gaining something like a snare, right? Like a movement speed reduction on this ability.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So that would be maybe a reason to make it ranged. It's a bit like how mercenaries with Colter missile get a slow from, you know, the persistent Colter haze effect you get when you've fired a Colter missile on the ground. Maybe something along those lines.
So, and it executes tactical advantage. Is that something that class gets something that allows them to immediately get a tactical advantage, right?
Right, yeah. I mean,
so they could have tactical advantage, get it, and then hit that instant tactical advantage and get it again, potentially.
I mean, yeah, certainly if you're healing, right, then you're gaining tactical advantage constantly through your Heal of a Time abilities, right? They have a chance to proc a tactical advantage on you whenever a Heal of a Time ticks on any ally. Or yourself. So yeah, sure. I mean, if it has no cooldown, then theoretically, yes, you could launch a Toxic Haze. One of your heals could hit someone, and you could do it again. But again, right, we don't know if it
has a cooldown. Right.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. It might actually have a cooldown because that sounds like really
overpowered.
Overpowered.
I mean, I would
get, like, yeah, I was just thinking that too.
And then only if you need AoE, then you go healing spec
spam AoE everywhere. I mean, they could also limit it by making it work the same way Plasma Probe does, where you can only have one active at a time.
Oh,
Plasma
okay.
Probe has no cooldown, right, for an Engineering Sniper.
But
Plasma
you can
Probe
only
has
have
no
one.
Cooldown, but you can only have one up, yeah.
Interesting, okay. Cool, so, and then along with some of these changes, they, and I guess we should kind of mention here, before we get too deep into this, that the overall leveling kind of and picking of advanced classes has changed.
Right,
like we're going to go in, and at the character selection screen, we are now going to pick our advanced classes. So instead of picking a main class and then going through 10 levels and then choosing it, we're now picking initially. So because of that, they're removing skills that are just not pertinent to the advanced classes.
Right, yeah. I mean, I think it makes sense to do, right? Because there are quite a number of abilities, so, right? Some classes, in particular, mercs, for example, have a very high number of skills, and a lot of them kind of do the same thing. So I think this is mostly a good thing. The abilities they're cutting are really not very relevant for the classes they're being cut from.
So, Rav and JT, you guys have played this game a long time. Did
yep.
you find that it's confusing to have all these skills? Do you think that a new player coming in would be confused, or is it just if you've played MMOs, you kind of know what you're to look for?
No, I see this. I see this a lot. Like new players that play an operative and then shoot their enemies from ranged all the time, and it makes. I mean, if you start at level one and you're an not Orb Metal, sorry. The bad side.
Showing your true colors
place.
There.
Yeah, sorry. Just had a problem. No. I mean, you start out with all these skills, and it's really not obvious which ones you should be using. And while you don't have an advanced class, you might actually be better off using a weird mix that you wouldn't of skills that you wouldn't use later. And I also think it's often so confusing to new players that you say, yeah, you pick a class, and then at level 10, you need to pick
your advanced class.
No,
yeah, I mean,
always have to explain that to people, and they're so confused.
Right. Yeah, because you like, okay, I want to start this game, and I'm typically like a healer, so I'm going to start this game, but actually I got to do a lot of damage skills from levels 1 to 10.
Because
and
you
granted,
have zero
we're,
heals.
Right, and you don't get many of your heals until you pick your advanced class at level 10, so you'd be getting into a rotation like, this is what I normally do when I attack enemies, and you kind of forget, oh yeah, I wanted to be a healer. And so when you get to be a healer, well, you know, all those skills you learned 1 through 10, you know, forget about all those. These are the ones you're going to use now. So I kind of think it's kind of cleaning things up, organizing it. And so everybody will start learning their rotations, you know, one ability at a time, kind of the way they were actually intended to be played, in my opinion.
When I first heard this, I was against it. I'm like, what are they doing? Why are they changing? Like, this is something that doesn't need to be done. But then I recalled, like, what is 1 to 10 nowadays? 15 minutes of gameplay? 20 minutes? Maybe it made more sense when you played for 2 hours to get to level 10.
Right.
But now that, you know, you get to level 10 without even really thinking about it, what difference does it make at this point? So yeah, simplifying things and removing things that can cause confusion, I think, is the right way to go. So that all being said, the Imperial agents are losing cover, crouch, snipe, things that are meant for snipers and not meant for their class.
Right, yeah.
Which is nice. Yeah, because then you won't have these operatives that start playing because they can't, like, be in cover, so they can't shoot from distance, so they have to actually get in close and play in melee like they're supposed to.
Yeah, right. It's funny. It kind of, you know, forces people to actually play correctly, let's say, right? But, yeah, really, ever since they changed the crouch mechanic for operatives whereby you can, in fact, be leapt to and such when you're, you know, even when you're crouching, really serves no purpose anymore for the class, right? Snipe isn't really an ability that you want or need to be using. Right. So really it's, you know, it's just kind of trimming excess abilities that really aren't needed for the class at all anymore.
Cool. So we also got a taste of some of the utilities for each of the classes here. Is there any that stand out for you, Conrad, in the operative?
Well, and we're getting in new level utilities with 5.0. Yeah. Legendary.
Yeah, we're getting legendary utilities. Yeah, right. Do we, I actually can't recall, do we already know how many of these legendary utilities we can pick? I'm assuming it's going to be limited to one, because we only have three of them.
I would assume one. Usually with expansion you get one, but, you know, who knows,
I
mean, but...
I would guess it is, right? Considering, you know, tier one utilities, you get three, right? And then you get two, and then you get two.
Right.
It would make sense to, you know, then maybe get
so
one, especially when there's only
three. So we're going up to four tiers, though, so that may change. Mm-hmm. It may be two, one.
It might, yeah.
So.
True, yeah. Or they might let you have something like 4-3-2-1, you know, make it proper pyramid, who knows. But either way, the legendary utilities, I mean, we have mobile strategies, which when you use exfiltrate, which is the operative role for anyone that doesn't play the class, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about if I call it role, it gives you a buff that lets your next overload shot be cast from 30 meters away and makes it knock the target back. And I think this is something that people were quite critical of with regards to PvP, because a 30 meter range knockback could potentially be very annoying.
That's huge, yeah.
Right, yeah. I mean, you know, think of things like from 30 meters away, being able to knock someone into, right, yeah, an environmental hazard on Hutball, things like this. I'm not sure if I am a fan. I think Force Push has a 10 meter range, and I'm not sure if I want knockbacks from further away than 10 meters. I mean, we'll see. It might not be too popular of a utility, but it's interesting to see that it's, you know, something that's still being announced despite criticism. Besides that, there's blow for blow. I think blow for blow is maybe the more interesting one to talk about, is where evasion, which is, let's say, the main defensive cooldown for operatives, right? It gives you 100% chance to dodge white damage, so right ranged and melee attacks for 3 seconds.
Single target. Yeah. Damage, right?
No, it's any kind, as long as it's weapon damage, right? So anything that's dealt by a lightsaber or a blaster, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Things like operatives with their knives, it's tech damage, it goes right through. Power techs with their flamey stuff goes through it. But things like snipers, marauders, that kind of thing, can't penetrate it and you won't take damage.
Okay.
And what this blow for blow utility does is the tech and force damage that you take while evasion is up, so the abilities that can still damage you while this cooldown is active, they would then reflect 150% of the damage from single target attacks that you take. So
interesting.
I think the thing is, it sounds a lot better in theory than what it might be in practice, because the whole point of an ability like evasion is to discourage people from attacking you, right? Oftentimes, if evasion is up, you're unlikely to be focused anyway, because people see that kind of green bubble around you. They know, you know, you can't be damaged by white damage. Sure, I realize that the intent is that when you have evasion up, people would want to use force and tech attacks to try and kill you through your cooldown. And then the idea is that you'd be reflecting damage back to them and dealing a lot of, you know, let's say AoE damage in a sense, to your opponents, right? Mainly a PvP thing. But you still take all the damage, so it won't actually protect you in the sense that you can still just, you know, die.
So you're saying that reflecting damage doesn't protect you and
right.
damage the other person?
Yeah,
it does.
Yeah. That's what it says. It will damage people that attack you, but you will still die. So I'm not sure how good it really is.
Damage to me says that you're not taking damage.
You're redirecting it.
Right, but it says in the post from the devs that the damage is taken and reflected, but
Right,
so
gotcha.
it specifically states that it does not work like Saber Reflect on Juggernauts, right?
Gotcha.
Which absorbs damage, right? You take no damage from single target attacks when you have Saber Reflect up. But here, you will in fact still take damage. So
you're just dealing back 50%
right.
more. So if they shoot with their ambush
10K
for 10K,
right?
They're going to
uh-huh.
take 15, and you're still going to take 10.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
okay.
Ambush would actually not deal damage, but Heatseeker Missile, for example, I think is a good one, right? Heatseeker Missile would hit the operative for 10K and deal 15 back to the mercenary. But again, not sure how useful this really is in practice. It seems like maybe a little bit of a red herring to me. But
yeah, because. Yeah. When I use evasion, it's usually to, like, when someone uses Master Strike on me, you know?
Ravage,
that's when
example.
You would...
Mm-hmm.
Ravage. Okay, sorry. Yeah, I know. I don't know the evil side name.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Ravage,
that's the
ambush.
Predictable damage, and mm-hmm. then, you know, there's a big hit coming on, and then you hit that skill. But
yeah.
I don't really know a sort of tech or force attack that you would do that on.
No, I mean, I think the most predictable telegraphed force attack would have to be Thundering Blast from Lightning Sorcerers. This would be reflected, right? And it can hit pretty hard as well. But again, how much do you really care about damaging your opponents if
yeah.
what you're doing is trying to stay alive?
It's
right?
a defensive,
it
yeah, it's mostly
right?
like,
it's wrong,
oh, please,
right,
I don't want to die.
Yeah, yeah. Right, when
yeah.
you're being focus fired,
I agree.
Generally speaking, you're more worried about staying alive. And I guess, right, like the one place where maybe it could have some use is in, for example, an arena setting where every bit of damage can matter. So it can be yet another way of just discouraging people from focus firing you.
Right, or if that person's really low in
mm-hmm.
like health,
yeah.
that might be like
right.
the last thing that helps you get over the hump to beat them.
Yeah, sure, yeah. But I think, again, people can adapt and just use AoE abilities because they won't be reflected. So, I think, again, this is something that maybe sounds more interesting than it really will be in practice, at least if your opposition is intelligent enough to stop attacking you when you have reflect up.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm sure there'll be some funny moments where, you know, a squad of mercenaries open up with Heatseeker missiles on someone and they'll die.
Yeah, so more reasons that I'm going to hate operatives. That's all I can say right there.
From my point of view, I'm a PvP scrub. I can't stand PvP. It's like I don't participate unless it's in a group setting, like with friends for fun.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know when people are doing what they're doing to me, when they're doing it. You know, they'll kill me, and I am like, you know, I'm trying to knock them back. I'm trying to like run away. So like for people like me, hitting evasion and having them take a little bit extra damage, it's a win for me. So
sure, yeah, I can see that. I think
right.
it will be something that a lot of people choose to spec into, because it, you know, it sounds very good on paper.
But you kind of skipped over that countermeasures that heals you for
right.
1%.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you
this
kidding me?
Be,
like they needed
the,
more to
the
heal
next
them.
One. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So countermeasures. Yeah, I wanted to just save this one for last because I like the design of this ability just because of countermeasures being a bit of a useless wasted ability slot. It doesn't
right.
really do much in PvP. It's designed to be a threat drop for PvE. But I like that they go and actually make them more useful, kind of like how it is with Marauders, right? Their camo is not only a threat drop, but it's a very useful defensive cooldown. Same thing with Flare for Mercenaries, right? Things like this. I think it's good that they give these abilities use. And essentially, right, it'll give you a 10% heal over 10 seconds when you use countermeasures, and you immediately get 2 stacks of Cold Dope Probe from your next Cold Dope Probe.
Right.
So this is, you know, I think this is mostly something that's to add even more survivability to DPS operatives. I'm not sure if they really need more.
I know.
DPS operatives are very, very survivable right now because of the way their role works with being able to avoid all incoming attacks while you're rolling, which is a very controversial ability.
Yeah, usually as soon as an operative comes out of stealth, I'm dead, so that's
but
pretty much on that.
But now you guys are talking about PvP, right?
Yeah,
because in PvE, that's the main problem of the operatives,
right,
if
yeah.
I understand
in
it. In DPS,
in PvE, this is
right.
good. Yeah, in PvE, this is a great change, because in PvE, it's one of the squishier DPS class, right? It has... it's a medium armor class, and really...
You're forced to be in close, like,
right,
so
exactly.
all those
melee,
immediate area ground effects you're susceptible to.
Yeah. It's melee, it has medium armor, and the defensive cooldowns are weaker than, right, all of the other... most of the other ones, at least,
right.
I'd say, right? There's no... evasion is good, but often, let's say, it's just worse than reflect. It's generally worse than... Force Shroud and stuff like that.
Right.
So, it's a decent change for PvE, certainly.
And as a part-time tank,
I don't know. Yeah, go on.
I was gonna say, as a part-time tank, anything that encourages DPS classes to hit their threat drop is a good thing.
So, I agree.
Yeah. Right. I mean, they can cloak already, right? So that kind of fixes that problem. But I think to answer your question, Rav, is it going to be enough? It's a step in the right direction, but it is certainly one of the weakest defensive cooldowns that you get from your threat drop, right? If we compare to, for example, Mercenaries or Powertex with their Flare ability, or the Mercenaries specifically with their Flare ability, and Powertex with Sonic Missile, those are very, very, very powerful, right? For example, Arsenal Mercenaries can get charges when you use Chaff Flare that let you take almost no damage from Force and Tech attacks, which is extremely powerful considering so many unavoidable damage effects in operations are Tech and Force based. And a 10% heal really isn't that significant.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
so 10% heal, it's really not that big of a deal. You're not reducing the damage you take. That is really the main problem, right? You want to reduce the damage you take most of the time.
Yeah,
healing often isn't good enough.
Ideally, the operative needs a little bit more of a buff to be viable in DPS,
right, yeah. and,
hard
and
mode, or night remote operations.
Yeah, especially since the other part of this utility, the Colto Probe and the Colto Infusion changes, they still require you to spend a global healing yourself, which isn't really something that you want to be doing on a DPS class, right? You want to be spending all of your global healing damage, and most other classes don't need to sacrifice any DPS uptime to use their defensive abilities. So again, I'm not really a fan of this. It's more something that for 1v1 situations, right? If you're just 1v1ing someone on an off node in PvP, you get even more self-healing. Great, sure. But is it needed? I'm not sure.
Right.
Well, let's try to not be here for 2 hours today.
Yeah.
And let's try to hit the highlights here. So moving on, staying with the agent in Sniper, the big one has to be the 10-meter stun.
Right, yeah, definitely. Right, no more debilitate, we get maim instead, 10-meter stun. There's not that much to say, really, right? Being able to stun people at least from a little further away than melee range is great. You know, right, it's just a strict upgrade. It's a good change, I think.
Right. I like the change, especially, and I'm going to delve into one of the utilities. If you combine it with the Executioner utility in Legendary, when you hit the flashbang or maim, can grant the Executioner, allowing your next takedown within 10 seconds to be used regardless of the target's remaining health and deal 15% more damage.
Right.
So you could stun somebody with maim, hit your takedown that you get for free, do an ambush, and then hit another takedown, you pretty much eliminated that person.
Right, yeah, and I think this one is actually very significant, particularly for something like arena gameplay. If you still want to use a hard switch strategy, and by that I mean a strategy where you're trying to focus fire one player who you have to render vulnerable by using stuns and trying to run people out of defensive cooldowns. I don't know how much you guys have done ranked arenas, but a very common strategy I've done quite a bit on Gunslinger and Sniper, so it's something that's speaks to me in particular. This utility, a very, very, very common strategy that you'd use all the time with such a game plan, is that since Flashbang is such a powerful way to knock out tank or healer, you'd nearly always start your hard switch with a Flashbang, right? This is incredibly common. Something I've done, for instance, is using a Sniper and a Marauder. You can use Intimidating Roar to incapacitate a tank, let's say, right? Tanks tend to often be kind of, you know, in the thick of things. So a Marauder can often catch the enemy tank in Intimidating Roar, which means Guard cannot be switched while the tank is incapacitated, right? And then you'd get Flashbang on the healer, so you have no Guard and no heals on one of the DPS on the opposing team, at which point you try and burst them down, right?
Right.
And this makes that strategy more effective because you're gaining burst with your takedown. So this could actually be very, very strong. I like this one. You know, it kind of plays into Sniper's strength already.
I totally agree. I think also, let's see, talking there, what did you think the giving them more of the survivability, would you say that's something that's been definitely highlighted in the 5.0 switches changes for Sniper?
I think the thing is, when you have some group support, the class is really quite survivable already, right? You have a lot of different ways to create distance between you and your opponents, and it has some quite powerful cooldowns with things like Ballistic Shield, right, being very, very strong. There's already Evasion, which is very good, and now you can even reset your cooldowns, right? Ever since 4.0, you have the ability to reset your cooldowns and then use a lot of them twice. And then, you know, right, there's obviously also the roll ability. So I think the main weakness has always been survivability in environments like solo ranked, when you don't really necessarily have the same level of group support that you would have in group ranked. Or, you know, you can kind of translate this to regular PvP war zones as well, where you can run into a situation where once you've kind of cycled through all of your cooldowns, then you can be very vulnerable. But
right.
I'm not sure if that's something that really that you can really do too much about, because if you might go too far in the other direction, then I think, and it might be too strong for, you know, kind of, you know, group environments where you do have the support from other teammates.
That makes sense.
So it's hard to, I mean, they're very good in PvE right now defensively, but it's hard to do the same in PvP without overdoing it.
Yeah,
that will be really hard. Yeah,
I think so too. Yeah, I would argue certainly in PvE they have the strongest defensive abilities of any ranged class, at the very least. Particularly with things like Ballistic Shield, right? Like, Diversion isn't as good in PV, but Diversion is amazing in PvP as well. Like, they have a lot of very, very strong defensive utility. I would be very careful with adding even more, so I don't mind that there isn't so much of a focus on that this time around.
Right.
Yeah. So, on to Mako's favorite person, the bounty hunters.
Right.
I think, honestly, my guess is we're going to see a huge wave of power techs come in initially, just because they're getting a bunch of, like, brand new exclusive abilities. So I think we're going to see a lot of people going in there to see what are these searing wave. We got to see that on the stream, right, with Brian?
Yep.
Yeah, we did. I think it's worth mentioning that the power tech in question that we saw was tank spec. So it would have been, you know, the instant version of Firestorm and not Flamethrower. So I'm not sure how much that changes things like animation and damage and so on. But yeah, I mean, they're getting some flashy new animations. Powertex already have, in my opinion, the best animations in the game.
I would agree.
So, right, yeah.
They're pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, they're very cool. I enjoy playing it purely because of animations.
So, new Death From really Above ability, similar, hopefully, mm-hmm. like still rising up in the air shooting stuff. Deadly Onslaught, we'll be neat to see the damage on that. The Searing Wave, and then Shatter Slug. What about their utilities? Is there anything there that stands out as far as something that we want to look for or potentially test out?
Right, yeah, so just to go through them real quick, we have Reel and Rattle, Grapple, deals damage rather than just pulling something to you, and lets your next Rocket Punch or Flaming Fist for the Pyro spec deal more damage and stun your target. This is, you know, clearly more meant as a PvP thing again, right? Gives you a tiny little bit of more burst damage and an additional stun to use for, you know, incapacitating people, particularly good in things like Hot Ball, right? You can grapple someone into a fire pit in Hot Ball, and they'll already you can just stun them with a Rocket Punch, which is great.
Nice.
You can even stun them twice, right? You can grapple someone, Rocket Punch, stun again. Just doing the math real quick in my head, I'm not sure if that would fill their resolve. Maybe it would, actually.
Probably pretty close.
I might have to go back on that statement, but even so, you could do it without having to use your Electro Dart, right? So it's good.
Yeah.
Nothing spectacular, but, you know, it's kind of nice. Next we have Shatter Slug, reduces the movement speed of all affected targets by 75% for 15 seconds. And this can happen every 30 seconds, right? I mean, it depends a bit on how good Shatter Slug will be in terms of damage output, right? I could see this maybe being used. If Shatter Slug is something that you want to be using anyway, 75% is a lot of movement reduction.
Right.
Could certainly be strong in things like Hot Ball, right? Again, just generally objective-based stuff, it can be very good if your opponent doesn't have something like a Marauder to counter it, where you can just slow people down and kind of make a break for the enemy line with a ball. And then we have, finally, Pressure Overrides. Explosive Fuel grants Pressure Overrides, increases maximum range of Flame Burst, Magnetic Blast, Shatter Slug, Ordnance Onslaught, right? Tons of abilities. Increase their range to 20 meters for 15 seconds. So this one, I could see being pretty good in PvE. I think out of these three, this is certainly the PvE one. Not to say it couldn't be good in PvP as well, but let's say the only one that's going to be used in PvE for the most part, I'd say. Definitely very good for situations where maybe there's AoE around the boss and you might have to move away. So this one is pretty nice. That's always been one of the main strengths of Powertech DPS in PvE, that they have some limited range ability. Even though it might be a little bit diminished now, it's still, you know, better than having to be strictly in 4 meter melee range all the time.
Right. I will have to say, when I read the Reel and Rattle utility, all I could think of Mortal Kombat and Scorpio.
Right. I'm sure it was inspired partly by it. Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely think some of those are mostly, like you said, I think two of the three definitely are going to be geared for the PvP element, and definitely the Pressure Overrides are definitely another one for PvE, giving a bit more range.
Yeah, utilities have kind of always been like that, right? There's always been quite a few utilities that are very clearly meant for PvP, that are very strong in PvP and don't really do much in PvE, right? So it's not surprising to see more of that, but it's good to see that there's at least one that looks pretty good for PvE as well.
Now, Mox said power techs are going to be 5.0. I tend to think Mercs will be the flavor of the month when 5.0 goes live. What do you think, Conrad?
I certainly think a lot of people will be trying them out, right? And I think a lot, or maybe most of it, has to do with this new ability announced, right? Responsive Safeguards. So just to read it out really quick for anyone who hasn't caught these class changes, this is a new ability that mercenaries will be getting. And it absorbs all single target damage, reflects 50% of it, and heals you 5% of your health every time it absorbs an attack. Right, so new defensive cooldown. And it sounds incredibly powerful, right, on paper. What we don't know, and it's really a shame that we don't, is how long does this last? What's the cooldown, right? That kind of thing. Those are so very relevant. It's so hard to say, right? This is going to be insane. It will push mercenaries over the top. Or, you know, it's close to what they need. I mean, is it going to be 2 seconds? 10 seconds? Right? We have no idea.
Or even charge base, like it'll absorb five mm-hmm. attacks.
Right, yeah. Exactly,
so
yeah.
How is it, like, what's the actual implementation of it? But yeah, it does sound pretty amazing. But mercs did need a little bit of survivability, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, certainly, right. I mean, it's always been their weakness almost. Not always, like if we go very, 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 very far back to 1.0, they were incredibly tanky in PvP. Was certainly flavor of the month there for a while until they had their survivability somewhat nerfed, but it's definitely something that has been, you know, their glaring weakness, particularly in PvP for mercenary healers, for example, is that they've always been very, very, very vulnerable to focus fire, right? And this is an anti-focus fire ability. So that's the most significant part. It's not just a new defensive ability. It's specifically an anti-focus fire ability, because you just can't be focused down, really, right? When you absorb all single target damage and you heal even when you get attacked,
right.
I think it's comparable to the sorcerer force barrier ability, right?
Where it's even better because it's reflecting damage.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it even reflects, and you don't have to, you know, just sit there and twiddle your thumbs while you're doing it.
So
right?
If three people are attacking you because mm-hmm. you're trying to protect the bomb,
uh huh. Yeah,
you know, and you hit that, man, they're gonna die.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think. Especially since it works on all single target damage, right? There's no restriction as to force tech, melee range, right? Everything. I think it's safe to say this is one of the best anti-focus fire abilities in the game now.
I don't know about that.
Reasonable duration, right? There's Undying Rage. Undying Rage kind of beats everything, right? But this would be up there, right? It's certainly one of the very best because there's just nothing that goes through it except for AoE, and it's very difficult to focus someone down with only AoE, right? There's things like Death Field, Flamethrower, but generally, right, you kind of do need single target abilities to focus fire someone down.
Right.
I don't know. I think it sounds pretty weak to me, but...
Oh, you're just trying to make sure they don't change it.
Just trolling.
I'm going to fall in love with this. You don't understand. I'm going to fall in love with this, and then they're going to nerf it, like, day two.
Right. I mean, it depends heavily on how long this thing lasts. I think if it lasts for, let's say, 3 seconds, for example, which is 2 globals, I think it's completely reasonable, right? I wouldn't even call it overpowered. Like, I think it's fine. It's something that the class desperately needs, something to stop focus fire just melting you. Because that is what tends to happen to the class right now.
PvP.
Right, yeah, PvP, yeah. Right. I think the implications for PvE are not as great anyway, because usually you're not necessarily taking a lot of single target continuous damage, right, in PvE.
So that's kind of nice, because, I mean, mercs are already really, really popular in PvE for DPS. Yeah. I looked into the numbers myself.
It's also very strong.
Mm-hmm. And it's the most popular, the most played one in raids.
Yeah.
So interesting. I didn't know that.
Right. Yeah. I think it's
they're pulling good numbers, aren't they? In parses.
Yeah, they are.
Certainly. Yeah, it's very
powerful.
And they're
survivable.
It's heavy
armor and stuff.
Yeah, it's survivable. It's very mobile. It has some great utility. With things like Arsenal being a very high damage spec, while still having access to armor reduction buffs, armor reduction debuffs, which are very significant. Tracer missiles. It's definitely in a very, very good spot. It certainly doesn't really need much in the way of, but you know, defensive help in PvE. So yeah, it's a very smart way of handling it. I'm a fan of this ability. I like it. I'm certainly excited to try it.
Cool. All right. So moving on to the Inquisitor, we have the basically probably the one of the most controversial, or at least spoken out about, changes where the phase walk, which was really mm-hmm. brand new to the Inquisitor, to the Sorcs, in the last patch or last upgrade, now all of a sudden being exclusive to them and being removed from the Assassins. Did the Assassins get something worthwhile in exchange? Would be my question.
Right, yeah, and I mean, I have to say, I find this incredibly amusing, where in 3.0, a phase walk is introduced as the new assassin ability, then later it gets added to Sorcs, it's for both Inquisitors, and now they're, you know, removing it from the original class. It's funny how it's kind of drifted from one advanced class to the other. To answer your question, at least what the developers said as motivation was that there's the new Shadow Step ability, right?
Mm-hmm.
For Assassins. and they were saying, you know, it maybe they felt like Assassin's had too much mobility between, you know, phase walk. There's obviously things like cloak, right? And four speed. But there is also the fact that four speed had its cooldown increased, right? So in a way, I'm not sure if I would really agree that their mobility went up so much, right?
Okay.
Like the cooldown on the Shadow Step ability is much higher than what the cooldown of the old four speed was, right? Because particularly for assassins, they had the utility that reduces the cooldown even further on four speed, right? So you used to be able to four speed a lot more frequently, and four speed is obviously a very powerful ability,
right?
So I mean, I'm not sure if I really agree that the mobility is that much greater than it was, and that they would that Facebook was pulling it over the top.
It's what weird.
What I can say though is that Shadows and Assassins, they did have a lot of ways to escape focus fire already, right? Because there's already Force Shroud and Cloak and Phase Walk, right? They had so many ways of escaping death in PvP, especially, right? So maybe it was kind of secretly maybe more motivated by that.
That
would maybe make them a little less slippery by having one less way to, you know, escape.
Yeah, that's how I read into it. But personally, I will kind of miss it, because when I'm tanking on my assassin, sometimes it's really handy to put your Phase Walk somewhere. If you know a boss a boss is going to be somewhere at a particular moment, and then you can be there before the boss is there. And with these, they can jump to a boss, okay? But if the boss is not there yet, it's situational, but still, I will kind of miss it, I think.
Yeah, right. It will certainly hurt the class. But I can see where they're coming from, particularly with, you know, the motivation that they already have so many anti-focus abilities for PvP that maybe they felt it was too much to have almost, you know, three escapes.
Okay, right. So is any of the new stuff they got a fair trade-off? So, like, they got this Reaping Strike. Is that a good trade-off for this?
Right, so Reaping Strike is new for Deception, exclusively.
Oh, and only for Deception.
It's Deception, so it's just, you know, kind of looks like maybe just an additional mool kind of thing. Maybe they felt like Deception was a little monotone, right? Deception is a lot of Ball Lightning, a lot of Voltaic Slash. Maybe they felt like, you know, they just wanted to spice up the rotation a little bit and added maybe add even some more. Like, it looks like maybe adding more burst damage, where you can, you know, you also now add this to the Maul, the Assassinate, etc., that you can discharge, that you can use to burst people down. I think also interesting to mention is that Force Lightning has been removed and Crushing Darkness has been removed. I wonder how that will affect, if at all, the Hatred and Darkness, the tanking disciplines. I'm assuming that they will still get the upgraded versions, but do we know?
Oh, I would
for
doubt.
Sure?
I doubt they. If they don't have the base, they won't get the upgrade.
You think? Because then they will need to drastically redesign how they function, right? Because pretty much the main mechanic of, if we take Hatred as an example, right? You used to have the Crushing Darkness upgrade Demolish, right? And you can reset the cooldown to make that an instant cast ability when you use a melee attack on something that you have your discharge damage over time on, right? And if all of a sudden you don't have Demolish, right? Demolish is a huge source of damage for Hatred Assassins. So if that's really going away, then they would have to get something in return, and we don't have anything in these, right, in this little
lineup. Notes. Yeah,
it doesn't say anything
about
it. I'm
making an assumption that, you know, based on the fact that they don't have the base, they wouldn't get the upgrade, but I could be totally wrong on that.
I mean, I would like to believe that they still get the upgrade, because the thing is, the upgrade is and always has been tied to the discipline tree itself, right? So rather than give you the upgrade, they could just give you a new ability when you reach that point of the part of the discipline tree, right? It would be nice to know also for Darkness, this, right? Force Lightning and the upgrading Depredating Bolts is also incredibly significant, right? It's kind of what the entire tank rotation revolves around, where you need to, you know, keep your damage reduction stacks up by continually casting depreciating vaults without waiting too long. So it would be enormous changes, rotational changes for both of these two disciplines if they don't get to keep the upgrades. So I suppose I'd have to say I would guess that they do get to keep them, but I'm very interested.
We'll have to see. Yeah.
Kind of get more information. Yeah, and what they would then get instead if they don't get to keep them.
All right. So finally, that brings us up to the Sith Warrior. So Jugs and Marauders. Anything in here that needs addressing?
Right. I mean, there's obviously Ravage is instant, right? That's something that we touched on a little bit earlier.
And it's still a big mystery.
Right, it's still a big mystery. I think if we skip back just a little bit to the Bounty Hunter, I did go through and watch the Uprising live stream because I was curious about how these, both this and Flamethrower, right? These are the two, Ravage and Flamethrower, the two abilities that...
Oh, right, that
right
had
now
their,
are channeled.
Their channel and, removed.
Yeah, right, and they're having the channel removed. So, watching the stream, the Tank Power Tech, who we could see, was dealing... something like 4,000 or 5,000 damage with rocket punches throughout the video.
Okay.
And as a comparison, this new instant, well, it would be Firestorm, because he was a tank spec, so it would be the upgraded Firestorm. It was dealing something like 11,000 or 12,000 damage. So that would correspond to as much damage as a Firestorm with the proc that lets you channel it in a single global rather than two. I don't know, did you guys play any shield tech, power tech at all? Do you know anything about the class mechanics?
Yeah.
Right,
I
yeah.
I play so a little bit of shield tech.
Right, cool, yeah. So, you know, you have your base flamethrower, it gets upgraded to Firestorm. Normally Firestorm would be a 3-second channeled AoE. When you're tank spec, you can gain, you know, a proc that lets you channel it in just one global. Second
right.
half instead of two globals, and you know, it'd still deal the same damage. So with that in mind, this new instant Firestorm for the tank discipline is essentially the same thing, right? Except you don't need to stand still for one global to channel it. You can just, you know, pop it off on the move. But in terms of damage, it seems to be pretty much the same thing. But unfortunately, it's very difficult to say if it will be the same for the DPS disciplines, because the DPS disciplines on live, they do need to channel Flamethrower for the full 3 seconds, right? Mostly it's relevant
right.
to Pyrotech, right? Pyrotech is the discipline that actually makes use of Flamethrower. But I'm very, very interested if Pyro Powertechs will get to keep all their damage as well and get it in one global, because that's something that they don't have on live, right? It makes sense to do it for tanks. Tanks channel their flamethrower in a single global right now anyway. Sure, make
right.
it instant. Doesn't matter. But it would be a very you know, very big DPS increase for a Pyro power tech. So and again, same thing with Ravage. I would love to know what, you know, the actual numbers on this are gonna be. Is it going to be half the damage of, you know, a full channel on live? Will it be the same as a full channel on live? Will it be something in between? I would really love to know this.
Yeah, we talked before the stream, we were setting this up, about the very thing with Ravage. Because what DPS spec is that you can, like, get, like, one instant, so you can do one and do one right after it, right?
Right. Yeah, so that's Vengeance Juggernaut.
Right.
Vengeance Juggernaut, when they use what's called Shatter, get to reset the cooldown on Ravage. So, yeah, that's certainly something that...
that would be huge burst.
The Vengeance mechanics.
Yeah,
right, yeah, you could look at, you know, instant Ravage, Shatter, instant Ravage. Yeah, this is a thing that might be possible. And would certainly be very impressive fast damage.
So it'll be interesting to see if these are things that cause them to make adjustments, or as we like to call them, nerfs, come,
right.
you know, January or so.
Uh-huh, yeah, indeed. I mean, again, the numbers do really matter with this kind of thing.
Right, and we've had closed testing, but we don't know how much of that was PvP focused, how much how many people were in there. So,
yeah.
You know, once we get these mass numbers playing this stuff, you know, what will actually be. I want to thank you for going over all these changes, Conrad. I do have one last question for you in light of all this stuff. What is the first class that you're going to push to 70?
Oh, good question.
That is a very, very good one. I'm going to have to think about this a little bit, I think. It might be Powertech or Vanguard, just because I've always been a big fan of the Pyro
spec okay. in particular, with all of the flamethrower stuff, Immolate. Like, I love the animations and everything, and I always liked how it played as well. I'm not sure if I'm really a fan of the instant flamethrower. Like, I just want to mention it real quick before we stop, because I think it's something that's a viewpoint that maybe I haven't really heard so much about, but I'm not sure if I even want them to be instant. Like, I like the current risk-reward dynamic with both Ravage, you know, with things like Ravage and Flamethrower.
So the risk of having to stand still big damage.
I like that dynamic, both in PvE and PvP. To me, it makes these interesting. You have to really plan ahead in PvE, for example, where there's frequent movement mechanics. You have to plan ahead. You have to know when it's safe to channel your ability without having to cut it off and lose damage, and you know at the same time not hold it for too long because you're scared of having to clip the channel. I like that it kind of adds an extra skill element in that way, and I also like that there's counterplay possibilities in PvP, and I think that's also something that hasn't really been talked about much on the dev live streams as well. For example, they focus on the positives. The developers, you know, they just kind of say, yeah, hey guys, this is great. You're going to be able to instant cast your flamethrowers and ravages. But what about the guy who's on the receiving end, right? I really like having the option of, for example, hitting evasion if someone's trying to cast ravage on my sniper, right? And this won't
using
really
interrupt.
Be possible anymore. Yeah, right. Yeah, like knocking someone back, right? If someone playing sorcerer, someone's trying to ravage you, hit your overload, right? Interrupt their cast. This will no longer be possible if all of these things are interrupts. And I'm not sure if I'm really a fan of that. I just wanted to, you know, kind of throw that out there as food for thought for people. But you know, we'll see how it all shakes out in the end.
Yeah, those will definitely be things when 5.0 goes live that they'll have to be shaken out in PvE and PvP.
So. Yeah, right. Yeah, I think also it could have major implications for something like a Carnage Marauder where, you know, using Gore they can get 100% armor penetration, and then if all of a sudden they have instant ravages, that can be, you know, very strong as well. But to answer your question, the first thing I will probably end up leveling up, bringing my Guardian to 60 first, just because it was the very first character that I started with, and I often just have a habit of playing through the story first on that character anyway. But you know, for gameplay reasons, I would have to say probably Powertech Vanguard next, followed by Sniper Gunslinger most likely.
All right, well, thank you for all that insight. It was a fantastic conversation. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, no worries. I'm sure I'll have more to say if we want to kind of do this thing again later.
Oh, when definitely
we've gone to see everything on live.
Oh yeah, we're definitely bringing it back. And we're not done with you yet, Conrad, because now we like to do this with every guest. We have the rapid shot comes. Round.
Mm,
here it yes. comes. So you want to lead us off, Mock?
Comes.
Sure, sure. We'll go easy on you to start. Who is your favorite Star Wars villain?
So, favorite Star Wars villain? Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Good choice. Are you enjoying him in Rebels?
This is going to sound really bad, but I've not seen him in Rebels.
You're
fired. Oh,
you're fired. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I've read the books, okay? I've read the books.
Oh, okay.
That should redeem me. I have read the Thrawn Trilogy books. Yeah, I enjoyed how that villain was written.
Okay, it's 3 a.m. By the way, you'll notice this question will understand where me and Mox were last night. It is almost 3 a.m. Do you run one more hard mode Flashpoint or get some sleep?
One more Flashpoint.
Nice.
good man.
I can't
Rav, you
want to
get the next one since you're peeking at our questions?
Hmm?
Yeah,
oh,
go for it. Hit me.
Yeah, number three.
You're sitting in your living room quietly reading when Valen bursts through the door. Do you A. grab a lightsaber and cut her down? B. Grab a blaster and shoot her in the face? C. Grab a bottle of Corellian rum and offer her a shot?
I'm going to have to go with option 3 because I feel like that would have the highest probability of survival at the end of it. I feel like if a stranger barges into your home and you immediately reach for a weapon, and especially if it's someone that you know are armed and more than capable of murdering you, maybe try to make friends.
Okay, then I have a follow-up question for that. when Rav comes home and sees you with Valen and drinking Krillian rum, what happens? No, never mind.
Purely platonic, okay?
Just best.
All right, I'm going to skip because I want to ask this question because it's my thing here. Regarding Revan, are you A, over him, or B, give me a play as Revan expansion?
I think we've had enough Revan in the game specifically, and there's so much other content related to Revan that, yeah, I think, at least personally, for Star Wars The Old Republic specifically, I'd prefer that we don't have something that at least revolves around it. Maybe cameos and stuff like that, fine. But an entire new thing? Let's not make Revan the next Kefes, okay?
Oh, amen. Man. Oh, Conrad. No.
As much as I like Revan from Knights of the Old Republic and so on, we don't need another Kefes meme, right?
Oh, man. Kefes for that. Okay, in light of the new Destiny trailer, who is your favorite Emperor? Valkorion, Sidious, or possibly you?
Why can't I say Malgus? Why is Malgus not an option? I feel like Malgus,
because he was a false emperor.
He was a false emperor.
But Malgus made sense. I feel like Malgus was probably the most.
I guess we're getting a right sensible.
Your logic, is not playable here in our Sith faction.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe I'll just say me then.
Nah, okay, you gotcha.
Yeah. I, you know, it's maybe a little arrogant, but Valkorion, I don't know. I think I could do better.
I like it. Okay, Rav, give him the last one.
I already know this one. Conrad, which Star Wars operation boss are you most like?
My favorite operation boss, Dreadmaster Bronda's Nightmare Mode.
Oh, yeah. That I knew, but actually...
Oh, most. Again, which one am I most like?
Like, yes.
Oh, right. Which one is most similar to me? Oh, that's actually a very good one. I'm going to have to think about all the different ones now.
See you in an hour.
Wow, that's a very good question. There's a really obvious one that I'm not picking up on, especially when you say that you already know the answer.
No, I read the question wrong at first.
Okay. You thought it was the favorite one as well? Yeah. I heard it wrong initially. Which one am I most like? Maybe Master from Master and Blaster?
Oh, that's a funny one. I like that one.
I thought you were going to say Kefes because you like so many roles.
Kefes, yeah, sure. I do like alluding a little bit of everything, but I feel like maybe Master and Blaster, he's this like kind of inconspicuous little guy that just actually is secretly incredibly lethal.
He is incredibly lethal.
But he's maybe not the most flashy or, you know, extravagant, but he'll get you.
Nice. I like that. So I definitely want to thank you, Conrad. That's the end of the rapid shot round. Thank you for all your knowledge you dropped on us today. I really appreciate that.
Right, and yeah, sure. Thanks for putting up with my tangents. I know I have a tendency to get carried away and go on.
Yeah, no
we
problem.
We were warned.
Yeah, we were warned.
You were.
I'm innocent.
That's true.
So, onto our quick mentions. Rogue One, 26 days, and it will be in the theaters. How excited are you, Mox?
I can't wait, man. I am so excited. I got my... I'm going to bring Chewbacca along with me again, my Chewbacca Build-A-Bear, and he is going to watch Rogue One with me on day one.
Oh, awesome. How about you, Rhett?
Nice.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm going to watch it on day one, but when you mentioned Chewbacca, I'm going with a friend, and I hope she then has finished her life-size R2-D2 knit thing, and we're going to take with us. I probably have to reserve an extra seat, but it's totally worth it.
That is pretty cool. Life-size R2-D2. Yeah. How do I get one of those?
Yeah.
Well, you need one. Knitting. That's the thing, right?
I need one now.
You just need, what is it? You wrap it around the rubbish bin, right?
That was my theory. Maybe quilt.
So how about you, Conrad?
It just so happens that the release of Rogue One kind of coincides with my birthday in the middle of December. So I kind of have a reasonably long-standing tradition with a friend of mine who has the same birthday as me. That we tend to go to the movies. So I will probably do that.
getting to see a Star Wars movie, that is a birthday present to remember.
Right, yeah, exactly. Exactly. What more could you ask for?
Star Wars, right?
For your birthday.
All right, and the other thing that kind of coincides with Rogue One, to kind of tide you over right now, the new Catalyst, a Rogue One novel, is out that kind of leads up to everything that will be going on to the movie. I know, Mox, I know you have that. Have you already finished that now?
No, I'm about an hour into it so far, into the audiobook, and it is phenomenal. I'm not going to give away any spoilers, but it starts off immediately with some recognizable names. It seems to be like kind of really setting the scene for the movie. It doesn't seem spoilery. It seems to be backgroundy, if that makes sense.
That totally makes some sense. I'm going to definitely be listening to that soon. I want to get that in there to kind of tide me over while I'm waiting for it to hit the theaters. So when I think, especially with all the people we have in the chat room, and we did promise some giveaways, it is a time now to have a couple of Cartel Pack giveaways. Now, the Cartel Packs that were donated by Nick, I want to thank him again for the donation of those. We will be giving those away. Those will be on Harbinger. But if you win today, and you're in the chat room and to win this prize, me and Mox will set you up. So we'll talk to you after the show and find out your information so we can get you a Cartel Pack. So we're going
right
to give
and
away
we'll
two
make
of
arrangements
those.
If you're on another server, we'll get some packs over there too. So please
exactly
enter, and don't worry, we will come through for you.
So I think we're going to go by a keyword today. You'll just enter it one time in the chat room, and we're going to go by all lowercase, and it's going to be Conrad.
I was going to tell you to make the keyword Chatty Cathy.
No, that's one word, Conrad. So everybody that's in the chat room right now, if you could type in the word Conrad, make it all lowercase one time, please.
That's with a C, by the way, just to, you know, to clear things up.
Yes.
Right.
C-O-N-R-A-D. I know. There we have some entries.
All right, Daroki, here you go. If nobody else enters, Daroki's going to win two packs.
Daroki's going to get these. Come on, somebody else. I know, Jim. I know you're still there. So I kind of cut you off while everybody's entering there. Conrad, are you going to be checking out Catalyst yourself, the book?
I don't know. I don't know enough about it. I have to research it, right? Like, I did enjoy reading the Thrawn trilogy, and I've certainly thought about reading more Star Wars, so maybe. I'm not going to say yes or no either way. I'll certainly keep my eyes open.
There's been some really, really good books put out in the last couple of years. Aftermath, The Life Debt, those are great. What's the other one?
Any of Corruption's work, maybe? That's definitely some of the ones that I've felt like maybe I want to pick those up. The Darth Bane and Revan ones.
Excellent.
Yeah. Jim, just make sure you type in Conrad there, and we can get you entered for that.
All right. Well, we can't wait forever, though, JT. If people are slow typing.
Yes, I'm like with Kidley on that. All SWTOR books are good. Have you got any guys? You guys all read the Revan book?
I haven't.
I have not. Yeah. It's. I probably will do at some point. Again, right? I've enjoyed some of Karpyshyn's other work, so certainly something that.
Who's this Revan you speak of?
Oh man, don't go there. That is an awesome
it is,
book.
It is. The final form of Kephas.
I call it the final form of Kephas. No!
Will we ever see the final form
of
Kephas? That is the question.
All right. Well, JT, I think that we're just going to have to award the packs to the only two people that entered.
I think so. Looks like the original Daroki and Slayer's Orange. So we definitely, if you could message me in... which I am at the Carillion Run Radio one, if you could message me, and we'll need your server name, which your character name,
and
we want
faction.
These to go to. What's that? And faction, please.
Server, character, faction.
If you're not on Harbinger.
It's like the old chat windows, ASL, right? Nobody
ASL.
Gets that.
Oh my gosh, dude.
Am I going back too far for people?
No, not too far.
Anyway, let's wrap the show up, JT.
Totally need to wrap it up, because I need a nap. Okay, do you have a question or show topic? Maybe not one not as long as this one. Maybe you want to announce an upcoming event. Why not contact us? If you are interested, send an email to CarillionRun@gmail.com. Who knows, your idea or event might be heard on our next show. Please take a moment to leave us a positive feedback on iTunes. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Again, if you'd like to leave us a question, comment, or any idea for a future show, email us at CarillionRun@gmail.com.
You can also follow and find us on Twitter @CarillionRun. Feel free to follow our personal Twitter pages as well. Jason can be found at JT_Holonet. Moxus is at FTWorthJim. And mine's at Raph_Griffin.
If you're on Facebook, like our Facebook page and or join our Facebook group. You can also leave a voicemail for us on our website, CarillionRun.com, or our Facebook page that could be featured on a future show.
Finally, if you'd like to be a writer or submit content for our website, send an email to CarillionRun@gmail.com.
That's going to wrap it up for us here at Carillion Radio. You want to definitely thank everybody that was in the chat room today. We had quite a lively bunch of people in there. Thank you guys for all your comments in the chat room. And thank you for the followers and loyal listeners for tuning in. And until next time, I'm Jason.
I'm Raph.
And I'm Mox. May the Force be with you, or keep those blasters by your side, kid.
You've been listening to Carillion Run Radio, a Star Wars The Old Republic podcast. Tune in next time to hear Mox say,
Revan who?
And transmission.